Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're back with part two in our series about healing waters, the belief held by many people throughout history that you could heal your body from illness and restore your health by bathing or by immersing yourself, sometimes just in hot or cold waters, sometimes in the waters of a special spring or location. Now, in the last episode, we discussed the prehistoric origins of bathing, as well as some evidence of ideas that became attached to bathing in the ancient world. For example, ritual and religious ideas about purity. You can see this in the ritual bathing by priests in ancient Egypt, or as ritual washing and bathing procedures outlined in the Bible. And then also the segue into the belief that became especially popular among the physicians of ancient Greece and Rome, that you could cure diseases by immersing the body in hot or cold water, often, though not always, connected to explanations based on the theory of the four humors. In today's episode, I wanted to kick things off by returning to talk about a few more aspects of a paper we discussed in the previous episode. This was the paper Water and Spas in the Classical World in the journal Medical History, 1990, by Ralph Jackson, who was at the time a scholar working for the Department of Prehistoric and Romano-British Antiquities at the British Museum in London. Now, as this paper addresses not only beliefs about the healing powers of bathing in water, but also of specific dedicated spa locations, I got interested in the origins of the English word spa. And it seems to me that the most commonly accepted etymology of the word today is that spa is derived from the name of a particular curative mineral spring resort in eastern Belgium, which is called Spa. So Spa, the common noun, derives from Spa, the proper noun, the name of the place, which, by the way, is a city that still exists today. You can go to Spa, Belgium. I saw on their Wikipedia page that one of the violinists on the Titanic was from Spa, Belgium. But the proper noun seems in turn derived from a common noun in the Walloon language, which is a Romance language spoken in eastern Belgium. And the original noun there would have been espa, meaning a fountain, or perhaps also referring to a spring. Now, another thing we talked about in the previous episode was a number of names for healing by immersion in water and related practices. So you have the idea of balneotherapy, that is healing by bathing, often in mineral springs. Hydrotherapy, a more general term referring to all kinds of water-based treatments for disease. I wanted to add to that another one that is mentioned in this paper. This is a phrase taken from what Caesar Augustus did. did when he was practicing some balneotherapy. He did a practice called taking the waters. So in most cases, that seems to refer to, yeah, just immersion, like bathing in waters, but also maybe in some cases, drinking the waters. And so I like that because it sounds kind of like you're taking the waters, almost like you take a pill. But it also makes me think of the competitive aspect referenced by Pliny the Elder when he talks about people bragging about how much of the thermal springs they can take, either like, you know, I can soak in this way too long, I can soak in there so long, and then also by allegedly drinking so much from the sulfurous springs that that you could no longer see their jewelry because their skin would close over their rings. Sounds like an exaggeration to me, or at least I hope.
Yeah, and I've seen this pop up with various springs we've been looking at in our research, where there will be traditions of bathing or soaking in the waters, but also of drinking the waters. So it seems like these two are easily confused. What's good enough for the epidermis is good enough for the digestive tract, I guess.
It invites kind of gross questions like, in what order do you do those two things?
Well, I mean, these are the sorts of questions one always has to ask about one's water supply, I guess.
Well, I guess in the sense that, yes, every glass of water you drink contains water that, you know, was poop and pee and everything else. The water cycle just continues around the world. But at least we hope today that water goes through some kind of purification process before you can drink it. I'm just imagining, I don't know, people soaking in sulfur springs and then just scooping that right up on.
Like a child in a bathtub.
Yeah.
You have that one to look forward to as well. Don't drink the bathwater. See how many times you get to say that. Real quick, though, I was thinking about this. I think a lot of this, what we're talking about here, it kind of comes down to a few different realities that are worth pointing out. One, we need water. And two, sources of water in the world are not all equal. There are better sources than others. And a lot of the human experience has had to do with trying to figure out what are the best sources. And so a lot of this you could maybe even look at as just kind of like a human overcomplication of that basic scenario. Like, I want the best water for me, the water that's not going to make me sick, the water that's going to ensure my continued life. And then we kind of build up everything on top of that.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And this brings us back to the next thing from this paper I wanted to talk about, which is when we discussed Jackson last time, we were talking about more general ancient Greek and Roman beliefs about the healing powers of bathing. But I mentioned there were also beliefs about the medicinal virtues of specific water sources, either for bathing or drinking, or sometimes both. And Jackson lists a number of examples of this. And of course, Pliny talked about specific waters in the sense of waters with specific properties. So maybe a sulfur springs versus alum springs and the different ailments that those could address. But here you can actually get into specific localities. So a few mentioned in Jackson's paper. One is the Aquae Cutilii, which is a mineral spring northeast of the city of Rome. Both Pliny and Celsus mention the cold waters of the spring as having the power to cure stomach disorders in particular. Jackson also mentions the sulfur springs of Aquae Abuli. This is near the town of Tivoli, also northeast of Rome. And Jackson writes, quote, described by Vitruvius, Strabo, and Martial, recommended by Pliny for the healing of wounds and frequented by Augustus when he was troubled with rheumatism. But one of the most famous locations in the ancient Roman world for bathing was the facilities in the city of Baiae, which is near Naples, famous for its baths fed by hot springs. And Jackson writes, quote, Celsus recommended the sulfurous sweat baths in the myrtle groves above Baiae. Strabo characterized the place by its hot springs that were, quote, suited both to the taste of the fastidious and to the cure of disease. And Pliny believed that, quote, nowhere is water more bountiful than in the Bay of Baiae, or with more variety of relief, meaning relief from disease. However, Baiae and its hot baths interestingly combined multiple reputations. So it was a place of healing from disease, but it also had a reputation as sort of a vice magnet or a party town. So imagine what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, but for ancient Rome. which was already had, you know, sort of a kind of baseline Vegas-iness to it. You get hints of this reputation in the writings of ancient authors. For example, Marshall described a story of a virtuous woman who went to Bay E, and while she was there, she hung out in the baths and then ended up deciding to leave her husband for a youth that she met there. And Marshall writes, quote, "She arrived a Penelope and departed a Helen," which is very judgy, but gives you an idea of what they thought.
Yeah. And, you know, and this strikes to something that's kind of key to the overall history of certainly baths and spas in European history, like that at times they become morally suspect. And that can, of course, lead to the downfall of various bath and spa cultures in different areas.
Sure. And of course, it was also a place, this is another aspect of the kind of the Vegas-y quality of it. Mm-hmm. It was a place of opulence and extravagance for the rich, hosting private villas of emperors, fancy spa facilities that had a lot of amenities. Jackson writes, quote, "Nevertheless, a vast sector of baths, imposing buildings to enclose the hot springs and sulfurous vapors, grandiose rooms and extensive loggias and porticos have all been identified in the multi-level complex terraced into the volcanic slope above the Bayan Gulf." And the paper goes on to describe a number of sort of individual buildings here, one misleadingly named the Temple of Mercury, misleading because it appears to not actually have been a temple, but a place for soaking in hot spa waters. And this was this gigantic rotunda that was, again, built up on the volcanic slope. And it had these big windows to let light in from the top, but also to ventilate the sulfurous fumes. And it was said to, in some ways, resemble the design of Hadrian's Pantheon. Another interesting thing about the area of Baiae is that there have been found artifacts from the time, which are glass bottles that have engravings on them that are supposed to depict this area, the region of Baiae. Like there was one example cited in the paper included on a plate that has all these engravings on the glass that is described as a, quote, bulbous glass bottle that was found in North Africa. And it has like these drawings that are supposed to represent this area near Naples. And it's thought that maybe these were glass bottles where the water from Baiae was bottled so people could take it away as a souvenir. And I don't know, maybe just hang on to it or drink it later or something.
Huh. That's fascinating. And of course, we still see that today with various waters that, even if they're not considered sacred, and in many cases they are still considered sacred, at the very least it's some sort of a curio you take home with you, some sort of a keepsake of a trip.
Yeah. Now, though most were not as luxurious as the facilities of Baiae, which were for the rich and powerful, many regions of the Roman Empire had their own spa facilities, even kind of far-flung regions that were far away from the imperial center. Jackson mentions especially regions where the locals practiced Celtic religions. So this would have included parts of Gaul, which is sort of modern-day France, and Germany. Because water deities in Celtic mythology held a special importance. And this also brings up an association between the development of Roman baths or spas and the presence of the Roman military in places far away from Rome itself, from the imperial core. When the legion moved in, this would often lead to the development of a spa resort at a natural thermal spring. And a spa would become a place for wounded soldiers to heal, or a place for recreation and sort of maintenance of good health among the ranks. And Jackson mentions that, so, you know, the Romans come in, their military comes in, and they build a spa. This was not done out of a sense of kind-heartedness to the locals, like, look what we're doing for you. It was out of self-interest because it was for the Roman troops. Or at least for their benefit, even if it was also open to locals.
But certainly it does speak to the value that the Romans placed on this spa culture.
Yes, and it's also interesting how that cultural importance means it gets sort of wrapped up in religious ideas as well, because Jackson writes that under Roman rule in one of these areas of the empire, you build a spa and a deity of the local religion would usually be conflated with a Greco-Roman deity that had similar powers or patronage. And thus you'd get situations like you had in the German city of Aachen, where the local Celtic deity Granus was combined with the Greco-Roman figure of Apollo the healer. And thus the composite cult figure Apollo Granus is born and rules over the local hot springs, the spa there.
Hmm.
And this is interesting because it helps give you a sense of on the ground how these spas were used. Jackson includes an image from an early second century votive altar found near Aachen appearing to depict Apollo Granus here, this composite figure of the Greco-Roman and the Celtic deity. And in describing it, Jackson writes, quote, "The enthroned god holds a lyre and a plectrum." So musical instruments, and carries his bow and quiver of arrows over his right shoulder. An inscription records that the altar was dedicated in fulfillment of a vow by L. Latinius Messer, a native of Verona and senior officer or praefectus castrorum of the 9th Legion, who may have been restored to health at the spa. So you get healed at the spa, that may mean that you have to now make a donation there. Maybe you made a vow to the local deity and said, like, okay, if these waters heal my wound or heal my sickness, I'm gonna be the sponsor of this altar or something.
Hmm.
Now, this paper also gets into another major spa location, a very historically important and interesting one at Bath in England. But I think I'm going to save that one for the next episode in the series because that brings up its own fascinating mysteries and histories. So we'll come back to Bath. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. LifeLock monitors and alerts you to identity threats you may miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become the victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve identity theft issues on your behalf. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Why wait for your tax refund in vain? Help protect your information immediately with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 25% your first year. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Identity theft protection starts here.
Now, for the next example we're going to look at here, I wanted to hit on something from Irish tradition, in part because the week this episode is coming out, it's the week of St. Patrick's Day. And I like to spend my research time a little bit on something Ireland related. And I found a great example in the waters of Leixlip Spa. Now, you'll find numerous thermal springs in Ireland, and you also find this tradition of healing wells and holy wells that you also see throughout England. You'll find sacred wells in Ireland as well. Different wells and different springs are attributed different healing properties for different maladies, and you'll also find them connected to such figures as St. Patrick, but also to older gods and goddesses of Irish tradition. But at any rate, balneotherapeutic medicine in Ireland was especially big in the 17th, 18th, and at least the early 19th centuries.
Yes, and this sort of correlates with how it seems that after the Roman Greco-Roman world, medical treatments involving bathing or immersion were very popular. And it seems that kind of declined later in the Roman Empire and was again comparatively rare through the early Middle Ages. But then there was sort of a resurgence in interest in bath culture and in medicine involving bathing in the late Middle Ages and the Renaissance. And then there was another big rush for it, I think maybe in the 18th and 19th century.
Yeah, so a lot of this, you see the fads come and go, right? Now, specifically with Leixlip here, this is located near the town of Leixlip in northeast Ireland. It's spelled L-E-I-X-L-I-P. And I understand that this area in general is a major Irish water source, or at least there are various videos online about the importance of the various water operations located in this region. This particular spa, however, was apparently, it's not one that has like a deep history in and of itself, or at least that doesn't seem to be the case based on the research I was looking at. Apparently, the spa was uncovered in 1793 by workmen digging the Royal Canal. They discovered this spring, and then as they were developing everything, they ended up building it out into kind of a Romanesque spa. And it was apparently quite popular for a good run there, but then it fell out of use during the early 19th century. And based on what I was reading, it was like for a while, it was just kind of in ruins. I think this probably lines up with just sort of that general dip in the popularity of balneotherapeutic medicine. Now, when you initially start reading about the Leixlip Spa, you know, it basically sounds like any other spa situation you might be looking at. You know, sulfurous waters that were thought to have healing properties, Romanesque baths catering to folks in search of such healing. But what really caught my attention is that in this particular story, anyway, there is also a worm.
A worm?
Yes. So as we move into this, I'd like to turn to the writings of Caesar Otway, who lived 1780 through 1842. He talks about this in his 1839 book, A Tour in Connaught, and he describes Leixlip Spa as follows. And I have to warn, this is all just part of a gigantic run-on sentence that I guess was just the style in those days.
Please.
I don't know if I can summon the energy to give it proper justice.
I have faith.
Otway writes, "It is not only a beautiful but an extraordinary spring, for if you believe all the neighbors, not a fish or frog will live in its waters. And though there be a flocculent, rusty-colored, ochreous matter constantly rising to the surface of the well, exactly similar to that which is found in springs strongly impregnated with iron, yet no test, either gallic acid or prussiate of potash, can identify any iron. But in the center of this flocculent matter is found a very red little worm, about half an inch long, which all those who have still faith in the salubrity of the well say is the sovereignest remedy alive for a sore leg. Nay more, let any one who has drank overnight from 15 to 20 tumblers of punch, and whose head is so hot that it makes the water fizz into which it is plunged, let him, I say, but take a quart or two of the water of this spring on the following morning, and he will lose all his whiskey fever and walk home as cool as a cucumber. I assure you, gentle reader, I have seen sundry making the experiment, and I actually saw them afterwards sober.
Whoa, I want to read the rest of this guy's book.
Yeah, like I say, it has a great energy to it. So to refresh, Otway is telling us that nothing else lives in these waters, but they seem like iron-infused waters, despite negative testing, and that flocculation occurs, creating a kind of wool-like coagulation on top of the water in which you'll find tiny red worms. These waters will cure you of your sore leg or your punch-inflicted hangover, either way.
That is a great story. And this did make me look up flocculant. Okay, so flocculant means kind of like coagulant. It means making particles clump together.
Mm-hmm.
A new word for the vocab.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it's like sometimes I guess you see it with like the kind of foaminess on top of like flowing waters where they kind of like get kind of dead-ended in a particular part of the stream, that kind of thing. Or at least that's what I'm picturing in my head.
Okay, but when he's talking about the worm, I can't tell, does he mean literally a worm, like a biological organism, a worm, or does he mean like a worm-like clump of something?
He appears to mean an actual worm, because I found plenty of other references to it. These details that I'm about to read are from a 2021 source, Survey of the Heritage of Holy Wells in County Kildare by Laughlin et al. For Ireland's Archaeology Plan Heritage Solutions. Quote, "A small worm lived in the scum on the top of the pond, and people used to put it between two pieces of cloth and rub it to their eyes as a cure for weak eyes. Some people left the pieces of cloth on the briars beside the well, but others didn't, as there was no saint associated with the well."
So what, there's no saint there to scold you into leaving the pieces of cloth on the briars beside the well, so you would just, what, steal the cloth?
I'm less sure about what they're getting at with that, but
okay.
It's hard for me to get past the idea that, okay, not only, yes, are there tiny red worms in these thermal springs, but you also are going to essentially squeeze them into your eyeballs or something like that, something way too close to that to initially sit well with me.
So you're squeezing out the little red worm juice into your eyes and that cures their weakness?
I guess, and it's maybe going through the cloth a little bit. I couldn't find much in the way of other references to that particular process, but still, it seems to be the case that there are multiple accounts of the red worms here. So setting aside any actual curative effects of the worms, you know, what might they be? Obviously, to live in such an environment, you need some matter of thermophile or extremophile organism. And we know that there are plenty of examples of those sorts of organisms, creatures that are able to thrive in heated waters, for example. But I was looking around, and there are plenty of accounts of red worms and also things described as worms living in thermal spring environments around the world, with some certainly endemic to particular springs or immediate environments and others more sort of widespread. For example, C.T. Brews in Animal Life in Hot Springs, published in 1927 in the Quarterly Review of Biology, writes of the bloodworms that are found in particular waters, understood, at least by this author, to be the larval form of various midges. And that while they might occur in various waters, the author described having encountered them in a shallow thermal pool at Yellowstone National Park.
Ah, okay. So this so-called worm may have not been permanently a worm, but one of the stages of life of another organism, maybe the larval form of like a type of fly.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can look up images of this. Like these are well documented, but they're not true worms. They have legs. They're a larva. Now, but still, that doesn't solve everything, because there are also sulfur cave worms to consider. There was a recent study of these creatures at Sulfur Cave in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Thousands of these worms live in the waters there. And Aaron Scott et al. For NPR described them as follows in September of 2022. Quote, "The worm blobs look like dark red sea anemones wriggling in the stream bed. The individual worms are around 1 inch long, thin as pencil lead, and live off the bacteria in the cave, which in turn lives off the sulfur.
Mm.
See, that's already checking off some boxes there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the worms in this case, dubbed Limnodrillus sulfurensis, seem endemic to this particular thermal spring. But one of its relatives, Limnodrillus hoffmeisteri, is also red in color and is very tough, able to live in polluted waters that other organisms can't handle. And it's very widespread and is found in Ireland.
Oh, okay. So another candidate.
Right, right. Now, interestingly enough, in either case, the red coloration of the worm or larva is due to hemoglobin molecules in the organism. Both midge larvae and the worms in question here are sometimes called bloodworms. They're both referred to as bloodworms, and I found an article about this with the Missouri Department of Conservation pointing out, hey, if you're talking about bloodworms, you might be talking about a larva, you might be talking about a particular type of worm.
Both good for weak eyes.
In either case, though, I would say don't go finding tiny red worms or larvae and squeezing them into your eyeballs. I looked around to try to find any details on folk remedies or folk medicine traditions that involved squeezing red worms into your eyes and or in any way really using them medicinally, and I could not find anything. Granted, that's exactly the sort of thing that in some cases may be lost to history, though.
Yeah, I think there are tons of folk remedies that never or only barely make it into print.
Yeah. Now, I did run across one article concerning mysterious cattle diseases, kind of a throwback to our Halloween episodes.
Oh, I had to think for a second. But yes, we in past October, we did a couple of different livestock malady series. We did the stuff on the cattle mutilation panic of the 1970s and on the traditional beliefs about elf shot, where people thought that the sort of subtle folk were using spiritual weapons to harm their livestock.
Yeah, I found in this case, it was an article from 1914 titled The Cattle Disease Called Canog and Its Traditional Cure by Amulets and Charms. And this was by William F. D. Vismus Kane, published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Antiquaries of Ireland, 1914. So the author here notes that the actual symptoms of the disease vary, and it's basically one of these situations where you have kind of a catch-all term that's referring to probably different ailments in different species. And at least in some cases, it was attributed to some sort of a biting insect, but also to the consumption of some sort of worm.
Mm.
Now, the worm that is blamed, it seems like accounts vary. There's like one account saying it's some sort of a black worm, which obviously isn't what we're talking about here. But there's at least some cases where they refer to a tiny red worm as being a potential cause of the ailment. And so the author here is citing one of these accounts. There's a discussion of, quote, a very small worm as red as scarlet and found in the height of summer and never found at the time of the year when the canog is seen. The cited source indicates that the scarlet worm does not cause canog. Canog, he stresses, is treated via bloodletting, but the illness caused by ingesting the scarlet worm is said to cause the head to swell, and then you cure it by reaching inside the cow's mouth and squeezing or popping a bladder that has grown at the root of the tongue.
Hmm.
And I was just kind of nodding my head to this. I was like, okay, I guess that's a thing that happens. But the author here cites a Professor Mason of Dublin. Quote, I think the scarlet tiny worm of the writer is with little doubt the well-known bloodworm frequent in shallow water in summer and is the larva of the Chironomus, a kind of crane fly, a perfectly innocuous animal. And then Mason seems to just dismiss this bladder bursting cure as a quack cure, similar to one that was done by quack doctors that would cure an animal by bursting internal bladders on the spine. Ooh. So some sort of fake healing technique. I don't know if this is a solid accusation that the professor is making, or if there was some sort of folk remedy in play and some sort of like swelling on the back of the tongue, but Professor Mason seems to be saying, like, no, that's just some quack trying to, cheat you out of a few coins by reaching down your cow's throat.
So this might be more akin to curing your cattle of elf shot by having them, like, eat fairy crabs and then poking them with a special knife or something.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to think about. Again, this paper, it deals in part with the use of amulets to cure mysterious ailments. But there are other ways to supernaturally address a particular ailment.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Another note about the bloodworm midge larva here. They're consumed all the time by trout. And I believe you can actually get them as bait as well. So perhaps some of our anglers out there have some experience with these bloodworms.
Flocculent fly fishers, let us know.
Yeah, and they seem harmless. I think some people can have allergic reactions to them. I saw a 2013 paper about this. But I wasn't able to turn up anything about their use in folk medicine or the use of the other type of organism that is sometimes referred to as a bloodworm having any kind of role in folk medicine. Hmm. So again, don't go squirting worms into your eyes. But I think it is fascinating because we have a situation here where, yeah, there's the more traditional sort of sulfur springs scenario going on. But then this added level of, oh, there's something about the things that live in the spring water. There's something about the organisms in it that have some reputed beneficial health effect.
Yeah, and I certainly haven't read anything about that in the ancient Roman context or anything.
Yeah, but it did end up reminding me of another example of supposed therapeutic waters with organisms that live in them, in which in cases where at least some traditions value the presence of the organisms themselves, which leads us to the world of fish.
Mm.
So, and some of you may know exactly where this is going, but my earliest exposure to anything out there about this, about there being fish in therapeutic waters and the fish are the therapeutic part of the immersion experience. I mean, the most I think that had ever happened is I've maybe been occasionally nibbled by a fish in a lake or at the beach. But back in 2009, my wife and I visited Erawan National Park in Thailand and toured Erawan Falls. These are beautiful waters. So basically, you have just like a whole system of waterfalls with these very clear pools in between them that have kind of like this blue appearance, very beautiful. And there are fish in those pools. And you were encouraged to, you know, come up, dip your feet, take your shoes off, get your feet in those waters. And then the fish will come up and nibble on the dead skin of your feet, which tickles.
But in some cases, you're saying some people believe there to be health consequences of this kind of thing.
Right, right. Now, I don't know specifically about the Thai scenario, if there's any kind of like traditional Thai medicinal understanding of these fish. If memory serves the guides on this particular trip, they just made reference to it being a pedicure. I don't remember there being any kind of medical argument made for it. Mm-hmm. But I know this is probably ringing a bell with a number of people out there because there is this wider spread use of supposed fish pedicure services where you go to some sort of a pedicure business and you'll put your feet into a tank that has fish in it and the fish will eat the dead skin off of your feet.
Once again, it seems like a thing that's unusual and interesting enough that a lot of people, I bet, would do it just for the novel experience, even if it doesn't, you know, do much better than a pumice stone for getting dead skin off your foot.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure exactly what species of fish this was that I encountered in Thailand. Again, it was a while back, and I didn't take notes at the time. I'm not sure if they mentioned a specific species. But I see some references online. These are like not papers or anything, but just like reviews and so forth, referring to it being a gara rufa or a gara rufa, I guess more accurately. And this is the fish that is often encountered in these supposed fish pedicure services that you'll encounter some places. They're illegal in some places, and I'm not recommending you go out and try them. And we'll come back to why in a minute here. But yeah, I saw some references to it being this gara rufa, but those are, at least I understand, to be native to Western Asia. And I'm not sure if this could be a situation where they could potentially even be invasive there, because I was reading on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service website that they're rated as like a low, uncertain invasive risk. So, yeah, I'm not sure if this could even conceivably be the same species.
Hmm.
But research indicates that there definitely are other gara species, and there are gara species in Thailand. There are at least three. There's one that's called Gara fluviatilis, and this seems to reside in the same general area that I'm talking about here. So if I had to just guess at all of this, and ultimately all this is would be a guess based on some of the things I was reading, I would say maybe it's that species, but I just don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the Gara rufa has certainly traveled around the globe via the fish pedicure industry. And I know a number of you have probably caught wind of this one way or another. The idea being that you go to this business, you immerse your feet into a tank full of these fish, and they nibble away at the dead skin on your feet, revealing brighter, more vibrant skin.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say the face of God.
We've spoken many times on the show about situations where there's some sort of especially in oceanic environments, where there's some sort of a grooming species that helps out another animal. I mean, most recently we talked about the whale lice on whales and how they're essentially doing the same thing. But mm-hmm. To be clear, when we're talking about it being a pedicure service that you're encountering like in a tank under a table, that is not a natural environment scenario. This is a very augmented scenario, and there are various issues to be had with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. On one hand, potential sanitation concerns, but then also ethical concerns as well concerning the fish. And as a result, yeah, it's banned in many places.
Mm.
So yes, there are other Gara fish, but the Gara rufa is native to the Middle East, particularly parts of Jordan, Syria, and Turkey. And in the wild, they feed on detritus, algae, and tiny animals. But in the absence of better food sources, they will feed on dead skin. So the alleged origin of the fish pedicure is most of the literature we're looking at is the Kangal Hot Spring in Turkey. Now, again, we're talking about hot springs in an area long known to human beings, so it's likely that these springs were known and utilized for all the reasons humans have visited thermal springs throughout their history. And while the fish were certainly here, they were certainly present in this location, it seems, things have changed in the last 100 years or so, 100 years plus.
Mm.
So there's a 2007 Scientific American paper. This is one I think you turned up and sent me, Joe. Titled Fish That Go Skin Deep. And I guess it's not so much an article, it's kind of a short bit.
It was just a short little snippet article, but it had a very interesting detail in it.
Yes. Yeah. It adds a little bit of historical detail that I was having trouble finding in other studies. Quote, these fish have acquired a taste for humans, largely because they have little choice. The spring is too hot to sustain enough algae and plankton to feed them all. In the past, the fish were able to move between the spring and a creek that runs nearby. But after learning of a story about a local shepherd whose wounded leg healed after being dipped into the spring in 1917, builders walled off the spring from the creek in the 1950s to preserve a captive school. A Turkish family has now constructed a hotel, villas, and a playground and markets the resort to psoriasis patients.
Now, I came across this short SIAM article because we were looking at papers that seem to be focused on the question of is this treatment actually effective or not for psoriasis? It seems obviously this is a form of alternative medicine, so I don't know if I have an opinion or not on whether there's any evidence this is actually useful for psoriasis. I guess I would have my doubts. But the fascinating thing to me was the thing about like enclosing this fish population that mm-hmm. used to go back and forth, but apparently now is stuck in the pool.
Yes, and would otherwise maybe not eat dead skin off of people's feet, but given that it is an altered environment, they are encouraged to do so due to the lack of other food sources.
Mm.
Still, I think the basic scenario here, what it reveals about the natural environment that has been augmented, this does kind of line up with the Thailand scenario, where, again, in that Thailand scenario, you had various clear pools that were connected by multiple cascading waterfalls, so sort of these kind of like traps of small aquatic habitats that are connected. But you can see why you might end up with a population of fish in a given pool that are hungry, that have maybe exhausted what they can eat and are then happy to check out anything that is introduced.
Mm.
So advocates of this treatment, sometimes called ichthyotherapy, they tout it as either a general cosmetic pedicure sort of procedure or as a treatment for skin ailments such as psoriasis. Again, we're not going to weigh in too much on the ups and downs of this. This is getting into the area of alternative medicine, but certainly when you're dealing with the fish take environment version of it, there are some definite reasons to stay clear of it. Anyway, in both of these cases, we have the bloodworms. We have these little fish that nibble at your toes. These are both situations where we have spring waters that are noted for their health benefits in part or entirely due to the organisms that live in them, the animals that live in them. And I think it's at least worth noting that thermal springs continue to be of interest to scientists because of potential extremophile organisms that might live there that also might reveal some sort of unique antibiotic discoveries. Though I don't think this is the sort of thing that merely bathing in the waters would unlock for a person.
Right. It would be more that like the organisms there are useful for research on antibiotics, not that like you're going to cure your diseases just by getting in the water.
Yeah. Not that I don't think anybody's making those claims, but then again, it's the exact sort of claims that could end up being made about a given spring. Like bathe in the extremophile waters of extremophile springs, unlock the unknown antibiotics for your own well-being, that sort of thing.
Well, the hot spring bloodworms and the hot spring fish. I did not imagine this at all as an angle we would end up going down, but this has been fascinating. And our series on the healing waters will have to continue with at least one more episode, maybe a couple more next week. There's a lot more interesting stuff to talk about. Of course, with a lot of the alleged cures we've been talking about up to this point, probably the majority of them, if there was an effect, it may have been a placebo effect. But there may actually be some cases where there's pretty good evidence of balneotherapy of various kinds, even in particular spring waters, having an actual direct mechanistic effect on healing certain illnesses. And if that is the case, we're gonna talk about some examples of that next time.
Yeah, so be sure to join us for that discussion. There's more strange stuff in the healing waters.
It'll be flocculent.
Yes, yes. Don't drink the flocculent waters. Don't drink the bath water. All right. Well, as we close out here, just want to remind everybody that our core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you'll find them on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. On Mondays, we do listener mail. On Wednesdays, we do a short form artifact or monster fact. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a weird film.
Huge thanks to our audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.